This is Weekday. I'm Steve Scherr. The fear of terrorism didn't silence novelist and essayist Salman Rushdie. Throughout what he calls the plague years in his new collection of nonfiction, Step Across This Line, Rushdie confronted the fanatics and fought back with the weapons at hand, words, wit, and will. Rather than hiding, Rushdie kept writing, kept speaking out, became part of the cultural landscape on Seinfeld, the hotel guest on The Golden Girls, on stage with Bono, writing about other cases, other hostages. He also continued and continues to comment on the culture, from the rise of Indian writers in English, the power of rock and roll. Salman Rushdie is author of 8 novels, including the Booker Prize-winning Midnight's Children, his last novel, Fury, The Moor's Last Sigh, and 4 other works of nonfiction, including The Jaguar's Smile, The Wizard of Oz. He joins us in our studios again. Thanks for being here.
Hi, nice to be back.
So we were talking, and your book is set up so it goes from art and culture to the more political things, and an easier transition, you said, but I'm jumping to the end anyways.
Okay.
You have these lectures that you gave, the Tanner Lectures on Human Values. You did this at Yale. And you write about the way good and evil is perceived and the way it's personified. And you write about how George Bush put the word evil out into this current debate, and how that makes it difficult to actually fight a war.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts as we move again, which I think some people feel helpless and inexorably towards what might just be another war?
I don't feel good about it at all. I mean, I hope that it's not inexorable, and I hope that that sense can prevail, because I'd be very concerned if this were to turn into a shooting war, you know, shortly. Having said that, I should say that I was a strong supporter of the American action in Afghanistan, which I thought was necessary, and I think, you know, largely speaking, successful, although it would be nice to finish it up. But in this case, I should also say I'm not one of those people who believes that Saddam Hussein is no problem. You know, I mean, I think he is a serious problem, and he's likely to become a more serious problem. And actually, in the last couple of weeks, more and more evidence has emerged which actually supports the American government's claim that he's been busily trying to acquire...
Tony Blair today.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, the argument is, the case is being made better than it was a couple of weeks ago. Nevertheless, I mean, I think there are some really serious, you know, hard politics reasons why it would be rash to start a war right now. First of all, I think even the United States, with all its power and all its influence, cannot afford to be totally isolated in the rest of the world. And that could easily happen if it decides to ignore the UN's intervention in this, and the fact that Saddam has agreed to let the inspectors back in. Not to allow that to happen, I think, would be a bad mistake. To go in with no international agreement to do so, I think, is very dangerous for the United States.
You wrote something about, in response to listening to people in the wake of 9/11, saying America got what it deserved, mm-hmm. that this was what happens when this is you reap what you sow, and you said that was repugnant in part because morality, in the end, if we're going to have a conversation in the world about moral action, is based on individual action.
That's right, and people are responsible for their actions. And if people commit mass murder, which is what happened, they can't get away with it by saying, "Oh well, it's because of American foreign policy."
But is any move towards a war in Iraq, isn't the administration doing the same thing by sort of taking a step back from their own what the individual actions are, but at the same time we personify it in Saddam Hussein, mm-hmm. as an individual and remove it from the Iraqi nation?
Yeah, I think there's big problems of and many people have pointed out in the last couple of days problems of double standards, that, you know, if let's say if Israel does what it's doing in around Arafat's compound, you know, that's clearly something which we should be seeking to prevent. I mean, that's a kind of piece of straightforward direct action without any legality behind it. And yet there's really very mild reprimands coming out about that, you know. And so people do feel concerned about that. I also think the big problem with Iraq is that I don't think the United States has any clear idea of what is to happen after Saddam Hussein. You know, and I think if you're going to begin a war like this, you've got to have a very clear idea of your exit strategy. Are they going to, for instance, preserve the political structure of Iraq? Are they going to preserve the Ba'athist Party, which runs the country, and simply put a different strong man in Saddam's place? how would that work? I mean, might he not be less controllable or just as uncontrollable as Saddam? Are they going to dismantle the Ba'athist Party, in which case will they be obliged to rely on military dictatorship, on a military intervention? So then you have a strange situation where in the name of freedom you're supporting a military dictator. Or are they going to try to reconstruct a democratic state in Iraq? And how exactly is that going to happen after more than a generation in which those institutions have been destroyed? So is this going to become a long-term American presence in Iraq? I mean, these are very big questions, you know, to which any government needs to have an answer before it begins a war.
So given that, I'm surprised to hear you say you're a supporter of the action in Afghanistan, especially the bombings. We're pretty devastating, even if it's a devastated country. We don't know yet the cost of those bombings. But as you said, it's unfinished business, not only in terms of arresting the leaders, but in terms of rebuilding that nation.
Well, I mean, I hope that that process will, it has begun and will continue. I mean, my simple view is that the Taliban were just about the nastiest government on the face of the earth, and the removal of the Taliban is a real gain for the human race. And I think all you have to do is look at the way in which the people of Afghanistan, particularly the women of Afghanistan, celebrated the fall of that regime to see that it was worth doing.
You know, I guess the reason I'm asking to be a political commentator is in part because the what you write and the lectures you gave are all about the choices that we are making and looking at evil. And you go into the whole section where you're quoting Shakespeare and the evil that men do and Kafka, and we are the culture putting Saddam up there as evil, personifying evil in that sense. And does that, you know, do all the other arguments get much more difficult because we do that?
I think it's difficult. You know, evil is such a catch-all term, you know, that it doesn't in the end describe anything. I mean, I think Saddam Hussein is a seriously bad guy. You know, and I hold no brief for Saddam Hussein, you know, but just to demonize him is just a way of using a slogan to justify anything you might do in return. Because if somebody's the devil, then you go and put a stake through his heart and that's fine, you know. But actually, just actions, even the United States needs to have justifications for its actions and thought through policies and strategies. And my worry about this is that this thing has not been properly thought through. I mean, you know, I don't think the American public will be up for a situation in which after Saddam Hussein, the United States has to maintain a gigantic military presence in Iraq for possibly a generation, and that all those soldiers will be in danger all the time. And that underneath that you have an unstable country, and it may well be that whatever leadership is put in there is a kind of disliked leadership because it's seen to be an American puppet.
So are you rational about this, do you think, in part, that approaching this rationally, because the whole fatwa was about demonizing you as well as your as
yes,
your work.
I got no horns, you know, but there were plenty of people who suggested that I did, you know, that I had cloven hooves instead of feet and so on. And, you know, actually I wear perfectly ordinary shoes and don't feel like that person. And I did feel a terrible dissonance, you know, between the person that I believed myself to be and the person who appeared under my name, you know, in public. And it's been a long fight back from that position, you know, getting rid of him, you know, and getting to be me again.
Salman Rushdie, Step Across This Line, Collected Nonfiction, 1992-2002. Salman Rushdie, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your phone calls, your emails. This is Weekday. I'm Steve Scherr.